Maybe you just got back from a holiday trip and noticed something bothering your car. Maybe you're hearing a wobble or a whine where there should be a hum. Our next guest has heard many of these over the years. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive. He's our partner in a monthly segment we call the Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having, or ask about that funny little noise. We can do pretty good impressions on the radio, and Zach is used to hearing these. 800-838-3760. By phone, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So we were just talking. It's a good thing we did get a chance to visit before we get on air, but about fluids. In your car, in your engine, in your brake lines, all that sort of stuff. And so much is made at some of these you know, 1 hour or while you're waiting oil change places about the color of the fluids. How important is the color versus any other indicator that might tell you the quality of that fluid and whether it's ready to replace?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, with a lot of fluids, color is important. We've talked before about automatic transmission fluid.
Should be pink, right?
Yeah, should be pink. Most. A lot of the German fluids are mineral-based oil, and so they're not pink. They are actually a clear, there's some viscosity there. You can feel a viscosity in that fluid, but it's a clear fluid. But with Asian cars and most domestic vehicles, but not all, it's a pink or red fluid, and that's the transmission fluid. And of course, we want to change that fluid before it becomes discolored. And the reason being that we'll use even numbers. There's 10 quarts of transmission fluid in the transmission, but when you service the transmission, you can't actually get all 10 quarts out. You might only get 3.5, maybe 4.
Cool. Do you have to suction them out?
Well, a lot of the fluid is in an area where, like in your torque converter or in a place in the transmission where it actually is not able to drain out. And so what the manufacturer calls for is just a regular drain and fill of what will come out. And by doing that every 2 to 3 years, you are essentially maintaining the fluid life by putting 3 fresh quarts in or 4 fresh quarts in every couple of years. And by doing that, your fluid will never become discolored. And so with transmission fluid, as we've talked about, automatic transmissions nowadays can cost $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 if they fail. And so it's really critical to keep that fluid clean. Other fluid as well, just like engine oil and power steering fluid, you want to change that oil before it becomes really discolored. But then there's other fluids like brake fluid. Brake fluid is a really common, it's very commonly undersold service at auto shops. And a lot of people don't understand the importance of changing the brake fluid. The brake fluid absorbs water, and it can need to be changed long before it becomes discolored. So it will look totally new, but still have, I think it's 3% moisture content is what you're looking for. Anything more than that, and it needs to be changed.
So do you have devices that can measure the moisture content?
Yeah, there's some like litmus paper that we can use, or a refractometer that you can actually shine aim into the reservoir, and it will measure moisture content. Of course, moisture contains air. So if you have moisture in your brake fluid, you have small amounts of air, and the symptoms of extremely bad brake fluid is a kind of a mushy pedal. And also that moisture in there will break down the rubber seals in your master cylinder and your brake calipers. And of course, these are all expensive items to change if you need to change them.
So for coolant, is that still supposed to be that rather sickly shade of green?
Yeah, that depends on the car. That the green coolant is really just the conventional plain Jane ethylene glycol mixture. Most all cars now have a special coolant that they want you to use, and there's actually
is that done with quotes, special coolant?
Yeah, not really. I mean, they've come up with these mixtures or special concoctions of the type of coolant and the additives and the chemical compounds that they're using are based off of the type of aluminum alloys they're using for their cylinder blocks and their cylinder heads. And remember, the coolant is not just a coolant, it's also an anti-corrosive. So it's there for three reasons, really, but a major reason that's oftentimes overlooked is to keep the internal passageways where it moves, to keep them clean and free of any corrosion, which eventually is going to lead to flaking and blockage of coolant passageways, which then leads to areas of the engine that aren't getting cooled, creates hot spots, which leads to the destruction of engine components.
So should coolant ideally contain little or no water?
Generally, it's a 50% mix. Around 50%? Here, we use 50%, mm-hmm. and that's distilled water. Now, some of the factory, you know, a general, genuine factory coolant might come pre-mixed. So you have to look. If you're buying a bottle of coolant, you want to ask, is this pre-mixed or do I need to mix it with water? Mm-hmm. And if you do need to mix it with water, around here, 50% water and 50% coolant is a perfect mixture. In very, very cold areas, you're
like
going to want to go.
Minnesota, for example. Is that
yeah,
where you're from?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Northern Minnesota, you're going to want probably 60% coolant and 40% water. That's going to give you better freeze protection. Again, there's a lot of universal coolants out there. You can buy a coolant that says it'll mix with anything, or that it can be used in any application. The real question is, will it mix with the coolant that's already in your system? Sometimes, you know, because it's, again, coolant is really hard to get every last bit of it out of all the little nooks and crannies where it travels. And so sometimes when coolant mixes with another brand or another type of coolant, it kind of gels and creates, and it creates a just kind of a goop, a sticky goop, and that can plug stuff up. So it's really, we like to just use the factory coolant where the factory coolant has been used. And if a car comes in that's a Nissan, they take a special blue Asian coolant. If someone's already switched that out to the generic green, then we'll just probably stick with the green and advise the customer, hey, someone's already mixed this, your factory coolant out. Do you want to restore it back to the original? In which case, we have a special coolant exchange machine, which will actually pump every last bit of the coolant out. But of course, it takes about three times as much coolant to pump it all out. Oh, it's sure. Kind of like a transfusion, if you will.
Right.
So
out with the old and in with the new.
Yeah, yeah.
Zach Edwards is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. This is The Squeaky Wheel, our chance to visit on car care issues, questions, and stories. Join us with yours at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Tell us what's going on with your vehicle or share a story of something that happened in the past that puzzled you or got resolved well or maybe didn't get resolved. 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. When I was asking about the ways that you can detect the fluid level or the water content in the brake fluid. You mentioned the refractometer, and I just wonder about the tools you're using now and how many of them didn't even exist, at least for automotive repair, when you got started.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Here's a great one that I just heard of the other day. There's a new digital oscilloscope that actually measures vibrations and puts them in the form of a wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so it helps with diagnosing for us to diagnose mysterious vibrations or chassis noises. Some of those noises could be like a clunk from a ball joint, but clunks can also be caused by, you know, struts or the upper bearing on the strut or a missing rubber cushion on a strut spring or a control arm bushing, or, you know, there's five or six or seven different types of things that can cause a clunk in the front left corner of your car. Well, this tool actually measures the frequency of the vibration and puts it in, and I don't know, I just caught wind of this and did a little bit of research, so I'm excited to read more about it, but it will translate that noise into a wave or a pattern that we can then interpret and compare against known patterns. And so what goes into the type of pattern it's going to give is the type of metal. So if you've got steel on steel and the frequency of the clunk or the noise or the vibration, combined with the type of metal or aluminum or whatever structural materials, is going to dictate what type of graph you're going to get. And then you can compare that with known graft patterns.
But the comparison, I would think, would be really important, because it's tough to tell, particularly if you don't own the vehicle yourself, what the normal wobble is and what's within the engineering parameters, right?
Well, yeah. But generally, this is going to be someone comes in and says, I'm hearing this noise, and so we're going to target that noise.
All right, so definitely a clunk as opposed to just a wobble or odd hum or something. Got some calls here. Let's go to Barbara in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange and the Squeaky Wheel. Oh, she's online too. Hi, Barbara. Barbara, you there?
We have a 2013 Hyundai Tucson, and we have a lot of, you know, hills going up to our house, inclines, and in any time we're going up the hill, there seems to be this drag, and you almost have to floor it to get it to go. And I always have it in the eco mode, and I'm wondering if that has something to do with it, or do you have any thoughts? Thanks a lot. I can take my comments off the air.
Okay, thanks, Barbara.
Yeah, Barbara, my first question would be, do you have a check engine light on? And if you do, then you want to get to the bottom of that, have your shop get to the bottom of that. If you're experiencing some symptoms, though, without a check engine light, certainly I would try taking it out of eco mode. Eco mode is a mode that's kind of, it's designed to do just to be economical. And so it's going to change, and not hugely, but it is going to change the way the car performs. And oftentimes for drivers, those changes are very, very subtle, and you're not going to actually notice. But if you were going up a steep hill, that might be the time you notice. So I think that's a great idea, would be to take it out of eco mode. You could put it in sport mode and see how you like that. And it's totally okay to switch as you're driving.
So don't stop, pull over, any of that stuff.
Yeah. As you're driving through your daily, you know, most of us take the same routes quite often. For me, when I go up a certain steep hill on a really regular basis, I always switch my car into sport mode, because what that does is it allows it to hold its gear longer before it upshifts. So it's, say it's in first gear, then second gear, and then normally it would go into third gear at 33 miles an hour. Well, by shifting into sport mode, it allows it to hold second gear longer.
So like what we do winding out a gear if we were doing a manual transmission.
If you were in a manual transmission, you wouldn't upshift to third right before a real steep hill. You'd keep it in second and maybe slow it down just a smidge. So if Barbara takes it out of eco mode, and that's going to put it in just regular mode, but then one step further, put it in sport mode, she might actually get the type of performance she's looking for going up that hill. So I would definitely try that first.
I only recently bought a car made in this century, so just getting used to the idea of modes myself. I mean, how many are there in some of these?
They've had that for quite a while. Even in the late 90s, there was cars with an eco mode and a sport mode. And again, it's really just about the transmission, the way the transmission shifts.
I did drive a rental car recently. It was a Nissan Sentra with eco mode, which seemed to be fine if you're on a freeway on the flat. Mm-hmm. Going up a hill of any kind of grade, trying to maintain 70 miles an hour, not so easy.
Yeah, yep. So, and for a lot of people in this country, they live in wide open flat, you know, in the Great Plains, all over. Eco mode is probably perfectly fine for 99.9% of their driving, and it gets you just a little bit probably better fuel economy and I wouldn't say a smoother ride, but just better fuel economy.
Mm-hmm. So eco mode for Nebraska, not so much for the West. But this also gets into things like cruise control. And based on the advice I've gotten here from you, I decided to try these rental cars and keep them in cruise control for a while. And it seemed to work pretty well. I mean, I didn't hear the engine kicking into passing gear or anything like that.
Yeah. And of course, with CVT transmissions, the constantly variable transmissions, they have an infinite set of gear ratios, so you don't really hear or feel those transmissions kick down a gear, because they might have kicked down four gears, but there's the gear ratio changes are so subtle that it's actually not like the old transmissions where you could feel it, hear it.
Clunky, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's just so smooth.
Zach Edwards is here with this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel, taking your questions and comments on car care, your stories of woe with your vehicles, or stories of successes. Join us on the exchange with yours, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. About the time we were talking about coolant and winter and Minnesota, and this not being Minnesota, about 50-50 water and coolant, you're saying here. But anything else that, I mean, given how much cars take care of themselves now, or let you know when there's something wrong, is there much you have to do to get a pretty standard modern car ready for winter in this climate?
Not as much, certainly not as much as you used to. It's again, it's just regular visits to your shop and keeping up on your oil changes, filters, and fluids, other fluids. And if you do that at regularly, you're just going to be miles ahead, and you won't have to rush in before the change of seasons. Spark plugs are a thing that need to be changed a lot less than they used to, and not really seasonally. I'm just thinking off the top of my head of something that has changed a lot. And spark plugs used to, I remember on my old Volkswagens, I would change my spark plugs. I was probably a little overly cautious, but I would change my spark plugs, you know, every 15,000 miles, maybe every 10. And it was cheap and it was easy for me. But nowadays, spark plugs last sometimes. Of course, manufacturers are guilty of recommending longer intervals than are actually true. So sometimes spark plugs are recommended to last 150,000 miles. Of course, when we go to take them out at 150,000 miles, they just peel the threads right out of the cylinder heads, and then you have to do major engine repair to fix that. But certainly they last 75 or 100,000 miles, and that, of course, makes the price of the spark plugs much more expensive than they used to be. Some spark plugs can now cost $50, $60 a piece, but they last 10 years.
Kind of like with light bulbs, you know, you
yeah,
people to spend like
exactly
99 cents on a light bulb and it would blow out in 3 weeks.
Yep.
Different thing now. Let's take a call here. William in Sutherland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on the Squeaky Wheel.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Yourself?
Fine. I have an alternative to all these complex problems with internal combustion engines.
Okay.
Electric cars.
Ah. Have you bought one yourself?
No, but my son's father-in-law bought a Volkswagen. It's a station wagon, electric. Mm-hmm. It only has a range of about 85 miles, but he lives in the Portland, Vancouver area, and he commutes with it every day. And they have a BMW, too, but now they hardly ever drive it because the electric car is so much cheaper to drive. And he put a 220 outlet in his garage, so when he comes home from work at night, he plugs it in. Next morning, it's ready to go. And his light bill went up an average of $12 a month.
That was it, though, huh?
Yeah.
$12 a month and no gasoline.
And no gasoline.
All right. And Billy, are you thinking about this for yourself?
Changing your antifreeze or oil or anything like that.
That's right. No oil changes, no spark plugs.
Yeah.
That's right. The only problem is that they're charging it with coal power still. And if you have a solar set up at your house, then you're completely, renewable in a way. The last question with electric cars is the amount of mining that it takes to create the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
It's just staggering, and
lithium,
a lot of people don't.
They don't
consider how much diesel fuel is going into the heavy equipment and how much mining is happening in the areas where they're pulling these metals out. And my only request for people is just consider all of those things. I mean, I'm obviously a car guy. I like cars, and I love the idea of electric cars. But some of the questions we ask is, what is that going to do to our grid? If everybody in this country switched to electric cars in the next 20 years, what would our grid have to be like in order to support that much more electric consumption? And how much more mining are we going to be doing for the precious metals that it takes to make all those batteries? But I'm all for the revolution. I mean, we're going to stay in business fixing cars, whether it's being under the hood or fixing creature comforts inside with infotainment systems and power seats that move 35 different ways and have heating and air conditioning inside the seats.
Right. Plus, there's still suspension and steering. And
yeah, undercar stuff. I think there's going to be a lot fewer shops as we progress into the future because it's going to be hard for a lot of shops to make the switch. But I get this question all the time, like, what are you doing and what are your thoughts on the future? And I remain optimistic as far as our jobs go. But it is a little unnerving. I've got a lot of money invested in the shop and I work really hard at trying to keep the shop relevant and current going into the future. But it's not just my industry either. It's, realtors are trying to figure out, how to deal with Zillow and realtor.com and restaurant owners are looking at robotics in the kitchen and, everybody's industry is changing so quickly, so I know I'm not alone with dealing with technology.
You do work on some straight electrics, don't you?
Yeah. They're starting to trickle in now more and more. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that most of those cars were still covered under a factory warranty. But yeah, we do, like you said, undercar stuff. I think we've done a couple power window repairs, definitely wheel alignments, tires, any type of stuff that has to do with the car actually rolling down the road. So, like I've said before, once they start flying, I'm going to be in trouble.
Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive and our guest once a month for the Squeaky Wheel. Always good to visit with you.
Hey, it's good to see you too.